Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
I love the new owners of CBS. Something happens to them, though. 60 Minutes has treated me worse under the new ownership than they just keep treating me. They just keep hitting me. It's crazy.
Hours after President Trump criticized CBS's coverage of him, the new head of CBS News, Barry Weiss, abruptly pulled a 60-minute segment to air Sunday about Venezuelan migrants who were tortured in El Salvador's Secat prison after being sent there by the Trump administration. We'll speak to Alexa Koenig of the Human Rights Center at University of California, Berkeley. She was interviewed for the 60 Minutes piece about her research into Secat. Then to journalist Jasper Nathaniel. He's recently back from the occupied West Bank, where he was documenting Israeli settler and state violence against Palestinians. He was attacked by settlers in October.
Press! Press! American press! American press!
Oh, he's right here. He's right at the measurement. Here he is. Here he is, Gary. There it is.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Pentagon said Monday it had blown up another boat in the Pacific Ocean, killing one person. U.S. Southern Command published video on social media showing a vessel erupting in flames with a caption claiming it was engaged in drug smuggling, though it provided no evidence to back up that claim. The attack came as two Democrats on the House Judiciary Committee called on the Justice Department to investigate the Pentagon's September 2nd attack on a boat in the Caribbean, when a second U.S. strike killed two survivors of the initial attack as they clung to the wreckage of their vessel. Congressmembers Jamie Raskin and Ted Lieu wrote, quote, "The deliberate targeting of these two individuals is a blatant violation of the Department of Defense's Law of War manual, which clearly states, quote, persons who have been incapacitated by a shipwreck are in a helpless state, and it would be dishonorable and inhumane to make them the object of attack," unquote. The Congress members add, quote, "Outside of war, the killing of unarmed, helpless men clinging to wreckage in open water is simply murder," unquote. Meanwhile, Venezuelan officials have accused the U.S. of piracy after U.S. forces seized two oil tankers and were actively pursuing a third. This is Venezuelan Foreign Minister Iván Gil.
Estas acciones constituyen actos de piratería.
These actions constitute acts of piracy as understood under customary international law and codified by the United Nations as illegal acts of violence, detention, or depredation committed on the high seas against ships and their cargo.
President Trump announced the Navy will start building a new class of warship named Trump-class battleships to create what he calls a golden fleet. A U.S. official told the Associated Press construction for the new ship is planned to begin in the early 2030s. A logo for the new ship class depicts Trump in the moments after his 2024 assassination attempt, pumping his fist in the air. Navy Secretary John Fallon said the battleship would carry nuclear cruise missiles. They all spoke yesterday in Mar-a-Lago, along with Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth. In Gaza, at least two Palestinians were killed Monday as Israeli forces opened fire on Gaza City's Shijaya neighborhood. Palestinian media report Israeli warplanes also struck eastern parts of Gaza City and areas east of Deir al-Balah and Khan Yunis. With the latest attacks, Gaza officials say Israel has violated the U.S.-brokered October 10th ceasefire at least 875 times. Meanwhile, Israel continues to restrict the entry of tents, tarps, and blankets into Gaza, despite cold temperatures and heavy rain. The winter weather has been blamed for more than a dozen deaths, including at least three children who froze to death. This is Hanan Abu Taiba, a Palestinian mother whose family is displaced and living in a tent encampment in Khan Yunis.
The weather is cold and winter is still starting. We don't know when they'll tell us to return to our cities. As for the children, I have twin girls. I stay up all night holding them and covering them with the black blanket they gave us to protect them from the cold.
Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz has vowed to build new Jewish settlements on land in northern Gaza that's currently being occupied by Israel's military. Katz said Monday the new settlements would replace those evacuated by Israel in 2005. His declaration came after Cardinal Pier Battista Pizzaballa, the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, delivered a sermon in Gaza ahead of the Christmas holiday, rejecting plans by the U.S. and other foreign powers to lead Gaza's reconstruction effort. The cardinal said, quote, "It is we, the people here, who will decide how to rebuild everything," he said. Here in the U.S., nearly 50 House Democrats sent a letter to the White House Monday calling on President Trump to hold Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu accountable for Israel's clear violations of the ceasefire. They write, quote, "It is imperative that your administration exerts maximum diplomatic pressure on the Israeli government, including by leveraging U.S. assistance to bring an end to the near daily attacks on civilians, including children, destruction of civilian property, and insufficient delivery of desperately needed humanitarian aid," unquote. Separately, a group of 17 U.S. senators sent a letter to Secretary of State Marco Rubio urging the Trump administration to demand Israel allow free and independent press access to Gaza. It comes after Israel's Supreme Court Sunday granted a 10th extension to the government to respond to a petition brought by journalists seeking access to the Gaza Strip, but ruled that it must respond by January 4th. Meanwhile, the Israeli Knesset approved an extension of a law allowing officials to close foreign media channels on the grounds of harming state security. The law will now remain in effect until at least the end of 2027. In Lebanon, at least three people were killed Monday when Israeli forces bombed a car near the southern coastal city of Sidon. Israel said it had killed three Hezbollah operatives in the strike. Lebanon's government denied that, saying a Lebanese soldier was among the dead. The UN peacekeeping force in Lebanon, known as UNIFIL, reports Israel's carried out more than 10,000 violations of its ceasefire with Hezbollah since signing the agreement over a year ago. Denmark announced it'll summon the U.S. ambassador after President Trump appointed a special envoy to Greenland. Trump tapped Republican Governor Jeff Landry of Louisiana for the position, who vowed to, quote, "make Greenland a part of the U.S., unquote. Trump has repeatedly insisted the U.S. needs Greenland for security reasons and called for its takeover using military force. This is Denmark's foreign minister, Lars Rasmussen.
Out of nowhere, there's now a special U.S. presidential representative who, according to himself, is tasked with taking over Greenland. This is, of course, completely unacceptable.
The Trump administration recalled nearly 30 U.S. ambassadors and other senior diplomats around the world Monday in an unprecedented shakeup of the U.S. Foreign Service. About half of those recalled are from African nations. All of them were nominated to their posts by President Joe Biden and confirmed by the Senate to terms of 3 to 4 years. A State Department official said the mass firings were part of enforcing President Trump's America First agenda. The Trump administration announced Monday it's pausing leases for all large offshore wind farms under construction, citing national security risks. Ted Kelly, lead counsel for clean energy at the Environmental Defense Fund, said in response, quote, for nearly a year, the Trump administration's recklessly obstructed the build out of clean, affordable power for millions of Americans, just as the country's need for electricity is surging, unquote. The Trump administration's order impacts five projects being built in the Atlantic Ocean, including a Virginia offshore wind farm that was set to be completed by the end of next year. Virginia has the largest concentration of data centers in the world, leading to soaring energy costs. This comes just days after the media company directed by Donald Trump Jr. announced a $6 billion merger with a firm that hopes to build the world's first viable nuclear fusion power plant. A federal judge said ICE agents who raided a nutrition bar plant in upstate New York in November violated a worker's constitutional rights. In body cam footage made public in a federal court ruling, ICE agents lined up workers and directed them to self-identify as citizens or non-citizens. 57 people were detained in the raid. Judge Brenda Sands said the conduct of federal agents was grossly negligent, as body cam footage showed men in masks and tactical gear entering a women's restroom and ordering a woman to pull up her pants and get out.
Resistance.
Yeah.
Hang it.
Got it?
Necesitas abra la puerta ahora.
Tell them back up.
Necesitas muevas. Vamos a abra la puerta. Con fuerte.
He's in there.
Yep.
Ready? Yep. Get down! Get
down! Get down!
Get on the ground!
Females.
Miss, pull up your pants, come out of the bathroom. Pull up your pants, come out of the bathroom.
A federal judge ruled Monday the U.S. government had denied due process to Venezuelan men who were deported to the notorious Cecat prison in El Salvador earlier this year after President Trump invoked the 1798 Alien Enemies Act to remove them without hearings. Judge James Boasberg of the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia wrote in his opinion, quote, on the merits, the court concludes this class was denied their due process rights and will thus require the government to facilitate their ability to obtain such hearing. Our law requires no less, unquote. Judge Boasberg gave the Trump administration until January 5th to either facilitate the return of the deported men back to the U.S. or offer them hearings. The Justice Department Monday briefly published thousands of additional documents related to the late serial sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. After it failed to meet a congressionally mandated deadline of December 19th to release all unclassified records, the second tranche of documents were available online for several hours Monday afternoon, but disappeared from the Justice Department's website without explanation around 8 p.m. The documents contain wide-ranging references to Donald Trump. One email, written by an assistant U.S. attorney during Trump's first term in early 2020, found Trump was a passenger aboard Epstein's private jet on at least eight flights between 1993 and 96. On at least four of those flights, Epstein's co-conspirator, Ghislaine Maxwell, was also present. The email reads, quote, for your situational awareness, wanted to let you know that the flight records we received yesterday reflect that Donald Trump traveled on Epstein's private jet many more times than previously has been reported or that we were aware, including during the period we would expect to charge in a Maxwell case, unquote. On Monday, 18 survivors of Epstein wrote a joint letter condemning the Justice Department's release of just a fraction of the files demanded by law and called on Congress to hold hearings to ensure the Trump administration is fully complying with the Epstein Files Transparency Act. They write, quote, survivors deserve truth. Survivors whose identities are private deserve protection. The public deserves accountability and the law must be enforced, unquote. To see our interview with Congressmember Ro Khanna, go to democracynow.org. and Paramount Skydance announced that Larry Ellison, the founder of Oracle and the father of Paramount CEO David Ellison, will personally guarantee $40 billion in the company's hostile bid for Warner Brothers Discovery. This comes about a week after the board of Warner Brothers rejected Paramount's offer in favor of Netflix. Meanwhile, the executive producer of CBS News' 60 Minutes is facing criticism for shelving a segment on the deportation of Venezuelan immigrants to El Salvador's notorious Cecat prison, reportedly telling colleagues she was under pressure from CBS's news editor-in-chief, Barry Weiss. According to The Washington Post, the segment was pulled this past weekend after Weiss asked for an on-camera interview with a member of the Trump administration. In an internal email to producers, the segment's correspondent, Sharon Alfonsi, called the decision to pull the segment political. Democratic Senator Edward Markey said on social media, quote, "This is what government censorship looks like. Trump approved the Paramount-Skydance merger. A few months later, CBS's new editor-in-chief kills a deeply reported story critical of Trump," unquote. Meanwhile, TikTok's Chinese owner ByteDance has signed a deal to sell its U.S. operations to a group of investors led by Larry Ellison. Under the deal, a new U.S. company will monitor TikTok's algorithm and decide on the app's content moderation rules. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. Coming up, we look more at the controversy over the 60 Minutes story. We'll speak to Alexa Koenig of the Human Rights Center at the University of California, Berkeley, who was interviewed for the now killed 60 Minutes piece. Stay with us. The Healers by the late Randy Weston. He performed the song when he spoke to Democracy Now! In 2012. To see the interview and his performance, go to democracynow.org. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The new head of CBS News, Barry Weiss, is facing growing criticism after she abruptly canceled a segment on 60 Minutes about Venezuelan immigrants who were tortured in El Salvador's Cecat mega prison after being sent there by the Trump administration. CBS announced the segment had been pulled 3 hours before the broadcast Sunday, after Weiss requested multiple changes and reportedly urged 60 Minutes to include an interview with Trump advisor Stephen Miller, who has orchestrated Trump's immigration crackdown. On Monday, Weiss told colleagues at CBS, "I held that story because it wasn't ready," unquote. CBS correspondent Sharon Alfonsi, who reported the segment, wrote an internal note criticizing the decision. She noted that her team had requested comment from the White House, the State Department, and the Department of Homeland Security. Alfonsi wrote, quote, "If the administration's refusal to participate becomes a valid reason to spike a story, We have effectively handed them a kill switch for any reporting they find inconvenient, unquote. Alfonsi went on to write, quote, our story was screened 5 times and cleared by both CBS attorneys and standards and practices. It's factually correct. In my view, pulling it now, after every rigorous internal check has been met, is not an editorial decision. It's a political one, she wrote. The controversy comes less than 2 months after Barry Weiss was installed as editor-in-chief of CBS News. In October, she sold her right-wing digital media outlet, The Free Press, to CBS's new parent company, Paramount Skydance. Paramount's biggest shareholder is the billionaire Larry Ellison, a close ally to Trump. Paramount's CEO is Ellison's son, David, who installed Weiss in her post. Democratic Senator Ed Markey of Massachusetts said in a statement, quote, this is what government censorship looks like. Trump approved the Paramount Skydance merger. A few months later, CBS's new editor-in-chief kills a deeply reported story critical of Trump. A sad day for 60 Minutes and journalism, unquote. Barry Weiss made the decision to hold the segment, even though CBS had already begun promoting the story online.
Began as soon as the planes landed. The deportees thought they were headed from the U.S. back to Venezuela, but instead they were shackled, paraded in front of cameras, and delivered to CECOT, the notorious maximum security prison in El Salvador, where they told 60 Minutes they endured 4 months of hell.
Did you think you were going to die there?
We thought we were already the living dead, honestly.
The full episode was actually streamed in Canada because CBS sent the finished piece to its Canadian distributor before the segment was spiked. Many media commentators have noted Barry Weiss's decision to hold the segment came shortly after President Trump publicly criticized CBS on Friday.
But NBC's really bad. And CBS, I mean, I love the new owners of CBS. Something happens to them, though. 60 Minutes has treated me worse under the new ownership than they just keep treating me. They just keep hitting me. It's crazy.
We're joined now by Alexa Koenig, co-faculty director of the Human Rights Center at the University of California, Berkeley, where she is also a research professor of law. Alexa Koenig was interviewed for the unaired 60 Minutes piece, talking about her students' research into human rights abuses in El Salvador's CECOT megaprison. The Human Rights Center's investigations lab recently aided Human Rights Watch in its report on CECOT titled, You Have Arrived in Hell, Torture and Other Abuses Against Venezuelans in El Salvador's megaprison. Alexa Koenig, thank you so much for joining us in this first interview since the 60 Minutes story was spiked. If first, as you are both a professor of law and also teach in the journalism school, can you talk about the significance of this story being spiked?
I'd be happy to, and thanks so much for having me this morning. One of the things that the Human Rights Center at UC Berkeley is really committed to is training a next generation of students, whether they're journalism students, law students, or otherwise, how to find facts in online digital spaces, how to assess the quality of that information. We know that online places can be rife with propaganda and other mis- and disinformation, and getting that truth, those facts out to the public. One of the first tenets of ethics in journalism is, of course, to seek truth and report it. That is something that we really try to ingrain in our students and to make sure that that doesn't fall along political lines, but that there's a fidelity to finding those facts and to getting them out as broadly as possible. When this story was spiked, that was, of course, incredibly disappointing, given the extraordinary amount of work that was done by Human Rights Watch and its partners, also by our student investigation team, who'd been working pretty much around the clock for several weeks, to pull together some of the digital content that could be used to corroborate or potentially disprove what the individuals who've been released from CECOT prison had said they'd experienced while in captivity. So I think that this is a big moment for American politics. It's a big moment for getting facts and truth out to the public about what has been done in their name, what is being done with taxpayer dollars. And I do think this is a story that eventually needs to come out.
So if you can explain exactly what this story was, I mean, you have Sharon Alfonsi responding in an internal memo to the spiking of the story by Barry Weiss, installed by Paramount, the father and son, Larry and David Ellison, close allies of President Trump, saying that there should have been interviews with the Trump administration. And yet you have the producer of the piece saying they repeatedly asked different departments, from Homeland Security to the Trump administration, to respond, and they didn't. And that if you followed that rule, any time a government didn't want a story to be aired, they would just say no.
I can't speak to, of course, what happened within 60 Minutes or the exact contents of the show, but what I can certainly speak to is the kinds of work that was being done and the very careful reporting and investigation. For the Human Rights Watch report that had come out fairly recently before the segment was being investigated and reported, one of the things that we really tried to support Human Rights Watch on was figuring out how they could corroborate or fill in gaps in their reporting through digital open source information. One of the things that we built with the United Nations Human Rights Office was something called the Berkeley Protocol on digital open source investigations. Those are the global standards for how to do digital investigations responsibly, fairly, and with an eye towards ethics. And so one of the pieces we did was we pulled together a number of videos that had been posted to YouTube and other places online. A lot of times, influencers had been invited into SECOP prison, and they had gathered video imagery of the internals of this particular facility. This is one of the most locked down prisons in the world. One of the things that I think Human Rights Watch was really trying to make sense of is, what is the layout of that prison? What is Module 8? What does that look like? What does it contain? What kind of water did these men have access to? What kind of light sources did these men have access to? And whether that met international standards for people's human rights being protected. And so by taking hours of video footage and really breaking it down screen by screen and analyzing the content of that imagery, we were able to piece together a picture of SECOP prison that could be basically investigated in parallel with the testimonies of the men who'd recently been released. I think very importantly, we did not have access to those testimonies. That is, I think, a really important component of this story, because it meant that we were not being biased by these very human narratives that are such compelling narratives when you finally do have a chance to see them, but that we were able to kind of build from the ground up, almost literally, from satellite imagery of the earliest construction of the prison to these internal videos, what these men, what the conditions were like that these men had been held in.
Can you talk more about what you and the Berkeley students did in showing the structure of this prison, of this notorious prison, where the Trump administration sent hundreds of Venezuelan men?
For both my students and myself, I think it was really, probably the best word I can use is upsetting, to see the conditions in which these men were being held. I know that the narrative circulating around them was that they were among the worst of the worst and that they were really vicious individuals. But what we saw, regardless of that, which I think we now know from the Human Rights Watch report, in many instances just was not true, was that the conditions were not conditions that would be consistent with international minimum standards for how people are held in detention facilities. For example, there was a place where men would be held with a tremendous degree of sensory deprivation, meaning no light. There was no natural source of light. It was incredibly dark in there. And one of the things that we could find from these influencer videos was just that people had bare concrete to sleep on. One of the things that we found was the water sources in some of these cells was so contaminated that there was just one source of water for these men to access The men, we later knew from the Human Rights Watch report, were often drinking the same water that they were using for bathroom facilities, for washing and cleaning themselves, for cleaning their cells. So it was likely very contaminated. All of this was very consistent when we looked at the actual built infrastructure of these facilities with what these men said they had endured while in